right, 5 p.m. 90.3 WHBC, WHBC HD is the station. Time for American Internet Radio. I'm your host, Tom Ryan. You should know this by now. My lovely wife and co-host, Eddie Morales Ryan, here as well, as we are and always have been for decades now. What we've been doing for the past decade is counting our way through a bunch of albums. It started a long time ago when my son made a list of alternative albums going back around 12 years ago when he was in college. And it inspired me to want to do the same sort of thing. I said, maybe I should make a list of my favorite alternative albums, and I could even write a book about something like that. So I started to put it together. Of course, I'm always, you know, like the number 500. It covers a lot of ground. So I picked 500 albums that were never reached the top 40 on the Billboard charts. And we started doing that for a while, but then it occurred to me that I really should be playing the pop album, you know, the famous pop albums too, the good ones. I don't care if they're famous. In fact, there's a lot of famous albums that I just won't play because, you know, sales has nothing to do with quality. That's really more or less what the point of all this is. So, but it made for a good balance where we could cover the popular side and the side that was unfortunate enough to not get popular. And now we're halfway through it. We've been doing this for 10 years, which means to say, like on our list of 500 albums for the top 500 of the top 40, we're at number 256. So we're more than halfway through on that list. The alternative top 40 list is way behind. It's only at around maybe 209 right now, I think. But that's going to change as we get to the latter part of the 70s. Remember, we're moving into the punk era, and those albums almost never made the top 40. So we'll have a lot of stuff to cover. But meanwhile, the point in time that we're at, since we're doing this chronologically, is November of 1975. And the album we're going to cover today actually reached number four on the top top 40. So it's pretty, you know, well-received album in terms of sales. It's by Joni Mitchell, and it's called The Hissing of Summer Lawns. For about a week or two, I wonder if Joni Mitchell was thinking maybe she should have called it The Hissing of the Histrionic Critics. I mean, this was her seventh album release, and it caused some controversy at the time because it represented a significant change in her style. Over the course of approximately 7 years, Joni Mitchell had morphed from a somewhat conventional acoustic folk artist to a uniquely idiosyncratic songwriter who had amassed a few hit songs. Her album before this, her 1974 album called Court and Spark, was an easy album to digest with a series of songs that were perfect for FM radio in 1974. But this album, The Hissing of Summer Lawns, pushed the boundaries of expectation, combining jazz arrangements and orchestration, and even an experiment with pre-recorded music, which was something that you really didn't hear of at that time, that you would grab music from somebody else, from some other source, and then do something over it. I mean, it's hard to believe, you know, considering that the rap world and hip-hop made entire careers and genres from it. And yet, if you kind of look at, say, well, who was one of the first people to do it? Well, the answer is Joni Mitchell. She was absolutely one of the first people to do it. Now, some critics were initially baffled by the lack of continuity between the songs on this record. So many of them panned what they could not immediately understand. Over time, though, the imaginative brilliance of this album began to shine through, and it is now considered a landmark and a high point in her career. If you're new to it, don't judge it too quickly. Sometimes great music requires patience and a good ear for it to soak in. So regarding Hissing of the Summer Lawns, it's worth the effort. The first track up was the initial single, the only single that was released from the album. And considering the fact that she had top 40 hits from Court and Spark and an awful lot of airplay, it must have been disappointing to see that this album couldn't get anywhere past the mid-60s on the pop charts. The single didn't make the top 40. But it's a great song. I think it's called In France They Kiss on Main Street, but what it's about is about of young lovers in America, and I guess, you know, thinking about the romance of that is often conveyed upon the French. And she's got a great band. I mean, she's got, well, first of all, her backing vocals are David Crosby, Graham Nash, and James Taylor, three of them guys together. John Guerin is on drums. Jeff Skunk Baxter, the guitar player from Steely Dan and eventually the Doobie Brothers, etc. At this point in time, I think it's when he was making his transition from one to the other. But Skunk is playing the electric guitar on this track, along with Robin Ford as well. So it's a hell of a lineup. So let's play that track to kick this off. Here from The Hissing of Summer Lawns, here's In France They Kiss on Main Street.
Downtown, my darling, I'm store thief. In the war of independence, rock and roll rang sweet as victory. Under neon signs, a girl was in blue, and a woman was fading in a suburban groove. I said, take me to the dance. Do you want, to dance? I love to dance. Schools and molded to middle class circumstance, and we were rolling, rolling, rock and rolling. Downtown, the dance halls and cafes feel so wild you could break somebody's heart just doing the latest dance craze. Gail and Louise in those push-up brassiers, dresses and rhinestone rings, drinking up the band's beers. Y'all was kissing under bridges, kissing in cars, kissing in cafes. And they were walking down Main Street, kisses like bright flags hung on holidays. In France they kiss on Main Street, amour, mama, not cheap display. And we were rolling, rolling, rocking.
That could have worked on pop radio. But by this time now, this is 1975, so this album is celebrating its 50th anniversary as we speak. But this was also around the time when AM radio was no longer a viable source for developing hits. FM had more or less taken over by this point in time. And that sort of changed the way that the top 40 was being presented. There were pop stations, and there were also the FM, you know, the cool stations, like the stuff for like the hip crowd, the ex-hippies. And, you know, that was where Joni Mitchell had more or less fallen in with that crowd. I mean, her relationships with people at Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, etc., who she knew all of them very well. And as we just heard, two of them appeared on that track that we just heard. But it wasn't necessarily leading to her having pop recognition. The album, though, was also causing problems because the critics didn't know. Like, this next song was the thing that shut down most critics. Here it is, the second track on the album. And this would be a great question for Jeopardy. You know, this person was the first person to include a sample on one of the recordings on their album. And then the answer would be, who was Joni Mitchell? I mean, really? It's not the Sugar Hill Gang or something like that. It was Joni Mitchell in 1975. And a lot of people were asking her, like, what was she doing? What prompted her to do that? And her quote is pretty convoluted, but I want to read it. Well, because I loved that Burundi Warriors passage. It had a Bo Diddley lick in it, which I took out and made into a loop, and then ran this black cultural poem under it. I thought I was black for about 3 years. I felt like there was a black poet trapped inside of me, and that song was about Harlem, the primitive juxtaposed against the Frankenstein of modern industrialization. The wheels turning and the gears grinding and the beboppers with the junky spit running down their trumpets. All of that together with the Burundi tribal thing was perfect. But some people just thought it was weird. And I guess she's right, because a lot of people did think it was weird. She took that Burundi track, looped it, dubbed guitar onto it, some Moog synthesizer, and then wrote a very strange impressionistic poem where she brings up information about Henri Rousseau, the music industry in general, what she hates about it, I think, and even the underground drug culture, like as she said when she was talking about junky spit running down their trumpets. This is like the stuff that she's putting together, and it was something that nobody had ever heard anything like this before, ever. And it's a folk artist? Yeah, critics were like, they didn't know what to think. What do you think? Then this is another thing worth talking about, though, is because now that it's 50 years on, how do you feel about it? Because, I mean, it seems to have gotten to be so easy to hear something like this these days that it might be hard to imagine just how freaky it was 50 years ago to hear a folk artist doing this. But listen for yourself. It's called The Jungle Line.
Above the jungle line.
Drifting on the air-conditioned wind and drooling for a taste of something smuggled in. Pretty women funnel through valves and smoke, coy and bitchy, wild and fine, and charging elephants and chanting slaving boats. Charging, chanting down the jungle line. There's a poppy wreath on a soldier's tomb. There's a poppy snake in the dressing room. Poison, poppy tourniquet, it slithers away on brass like mouthpiece bit. And metal skin and ivory birds go steaming up to Rousseau's vines. They go steaming up to Brooklyn Bridge. Steaming, steaming up the jungle line.
Now, I was the weird one at this point in time because I heard that and I immediately loved it. Now, I'm a drummer, and I love to hear weird things, and at this point in time, I was actually like doing things like collecting albums that were from other nations and, you know, trying to find cool ideas for rhythms and stuff like that up around this time. So when Joni Mitchell did this and incorporated it into her album, it was something that hit, that sparked me immediately, but I apparently was very much on the, you know, other side of what most people were thinking about it. It's that song that inspired her to do the album cover. Now, Joni, I think she pretty much, not always, but she usually provides art for all of her albums, or most of them. And on The Hissing of Summer Lawns, there's this cool, like, painting that she made of, in the background is like Beverly Hills or something that looks like Beverly Hills. It's, you know, it's a, you can see a city, but you also see some nice houses in the forefront. And then there's this green area, and there's five men, presumably African men, walking, carrying this gigantic snake off the side of the cover photo. And that was her more or less way of expressing what was going on in her head with the jungle line, probably combining those thoughts in terms of how it's related to African culture and showing in the photo that she's like, no, but I'm layering this upon the way that I live in this country now. And there's some sort of connection. It might not be easy to see the connection, but it's easy to see the musical connection that she makes. That's really the only point that I can make. The rest of it is purely up to you. But I thought it was a really cool idea. What Joni Mitchell was mostly doing, though, as far as change in the Court and Spark, the previous album, provided a hint toward it, is that Joni Mitchell was moving very much toward a jazz sort of frame of mind. And this is the album where she pretty much lays it out. She's like saying, like, I'm not a folk artist right now. I'm not going to be some simple little, you know, rock and roll waif girl who's going to sing songs high pitched and talk about clouds and roses. No, that's not the Joni Mitchell that you're going to hear here. And I think that's exactly what made a lot of people stand off, because if you have expectations and all of a sudden the person who you think is somebody turns into somebody completely different, well, I guess you start to get a little bit judgy. Well, get used to it, because Joni Mitchell didn't change. And it turns out that over time, it was very much appreciated. And I think a lot of critics had to eat crow. after a while because they spoke too soon about what they thought about Joni Mitchell as a woman. And these are men who are writing these reviews, of course. So they've got this diminutive perspective about her that wasn't really straight up honest. I would honestly have to say that if this was being put out by a man, they would have said, wow, how creative, how incredible. Like, and he here is this person who was just doing like a, you know, relatively straightforward folk, and now they're moving into an entire new genre. Very cool, man. You know, that's good. But if you're a woman, they're going to be judgy. This track is an example of that jazz style that she was leaning toward. The song is called Edith and the Kingpin. It's about a girlfriend coming to back to meet her or to hang out with her partner, who is a criminal of some sort. Probably, what do you call a girlfriend of a criminal? What, a mole? I mean, why do criminals have moles and everybody else has girlfriends? I never got that. Oh yeah, she's his mole. And we'll play two in a row. We'll let that go into the follow-up track, which is Don't Interrupt the Sorrow.
Sophomore jive, puppet witches. Be polite. A room full of glasses. He says, you're not just liberation doll. And he chains me with that serpent to that Ethiopian wall. Animarizing queen of queens. Wash my guilt of Eden. Wash and balance me. Animarizing, uprising in me tonight. She's a vengeful little goddess with an ancient crown to fight. Truth goes up in vapors, the steeples lean. Winds of change, patriarchs, snug in your Bible belt dreams. God goes up the chimney like childhood Santa Claus. The good slaves love the good book. A rebel loves a cause.
WHPCHD. The show is American Hit Radio. I'm your host, Tom Ryan, and my lovely wife, co-host, Heidi Morales Ryan, running the boards. There's so much I want to talk about on this album, but I've already used up my talking allotment, so I've got to keep moving. I will say this, though, to my point, if you listen to the words of that song, the lyrics are kind of about a woman trying to break away from weaker partners, and that's sort of like what I was saying about how she was reacting to the way that critics were treating her. So that's a whole thing. The next song is a very feminine song as well. It's called Shades of Scarlet Conquering, basically about a Southern belle who thinks that she's Scarlet O'Hara. So here it is.
Scarlet in her deep complaint. she feels. She covers her eyes in the X-rated scenes, running from the reels. Beauty and madness to be praised, 'cause it is not easy to be brave, to walk around in so much need. Dressed in stolen clothes, she stands, cast iron and frail. With her impossibly gentle hands and her blood-red fingernails, out of the fire and still smoldering, she says, a woman must have everything. Shades of scarlet conquering, she says, a woman must have everything.
The next track is also about from a woman's perspective, as you'd imagine. This time it's about living in the suburbs and the suffocation that women can feel if they live with a husband who treats them like they're a trophy or something like that, quote unquote. And we'll segue that into a song called The Boho Dance, which is maybe a self-critical song about Joni Mitchell questioning, like, you know, how do you stay, quote unquote, true to your art? We'll play them back to back. Sing of Summer Lawns and The Boho Dance.
Windows sill, see the blue pools in squinting sun. cellar in the boho zone. I went looking for some sweet inspiration. Oh well, just another hard time band with Negro affectations. I was a hopeful in rooms like this when I was working cheap. It's an old romance, the boho dance. It hasn't gone to sleep.
With the pornographic watch. But by this point, though, the jazz influence is quite obvious, I would think. And for this next track, she even pulls a jazz track by Sweets Edison and incorporates it into what she's talking about. It's called Harry's House Centerpiece. And again, it's about a woman feeling suffocated in a relationship. So we'll play that track and we'll segue that into Sweet Bird, one of the more traditional acoustic songs on the album for Joni.
His baggage off the carousel. He takes a taxi into town. Yellow schools of taxi fishes, Jonah and a ticking quail, caught up at the lights in the fishnet windows of blue. credit card ice, looking for the chic and the fancy to buy. He opens up his suitcase in the Continental Suite, and people 30 stories down look like colored currants in the street. A helicopter lands on the Pan Am roof like a dragonfly on a tomb, and businessmen in button down press into conference rooms. Battalions of paper-minded males talking commodities and sales, while at home their paper wives and their paper kids paper the walls to keep their gut reactions hid. For the kitchen, climbing ivy for the bed, she is lost in house and gardens. He's caught up in chief of staff. He drifts off into the memory of the way she looked in school, with her body public swimming pool. Just what he could do with Harry's house, and Harry's take-home pay.
Track of what I consider an immensely awesome collection of varied songs. The last song is called Shadows and Light, and it's this uber multi-tracked vocal thing with very minimal musical accompaniment. I think it's a stunning closer. Thanks so much for listening, and see you next week at the brand new album. It's going to be Neil Young. See you then.
And it has some source of light. Blindness, blindness inside. The perils of benefactors, the blessings of parasites. Blind. Threatened by all things, devil of cruelty, drawn to all things, devil of delight, mythical devil of the ever-present laws, governing presidents, freedom scribbled in the subway. It's like night, night and day. Threatened by all things, God of cruelty, governing day, day and night. Critics of all expression, judges in black and white, saying it's wrong. Standards or some ideals we fight for wrong, wrong and right. Threatened by all things, men of cruelty. Governing wrong, wrong and right. Governing wrong, wrong and right. Wrong and right.
Thanks again. See you next week. Bye-bye.
What an electrifying episode.